As we reach the end of the milestone year 2000 and look ahead to a new year, are you making the most of your life, or is time slipping away while you squander opportunities and make excuses? Stay tuned. This is the Back to God Hour, a program that looks at life in light of the Bible, exploring God's answers to our questions. Our host is David Fettes, and the topic we'll be dealing with today is Winner or Whiner?
Are you a winner or a whiner? It may sound rude for me to ask you that question, but don't worry. You don't have to tell me the answer. You just need to answer it for yourself. Every so often, you need to take stock of your life, and there's no better time to take stock than when you leave an old year behind and begin a new one. Look back at where you've been. Take a hard look at where you are now. Determine where you're going in the future. And answer the basic question, are you a winner or a whiner? Are you making the most of your life, or is time slipping through your fingers? Are you achieving anything worthwhile, or are you squandering opportunities and making excuses? Are you using your God-given talents for good, or letting your talent lie useless? Are you winning God's approval, or whining that God isn't very nice to you? Are you a winner or a whiner? Here at the end of this landmark year 2000, take stock. Be honest with yourself. Evaluate yourself in light of a powerful story told by Jesus himself. The kingdom of heaven, said Jesus, will be like a man going on a journey, who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with the 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." The man with the 2 talents also came. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." Then the man who had received the 1 talent came. "Master," he said, "I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." His master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant! So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well, then you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers, so that when I returned I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." In this parable, Jesus reveals an eternity of difference between winners who work and whiners who shirk. Working winners end up sharing their master's happiness forever, while shirking whiners end up in hellish darkness forever. That's because working shows a good relationship to the master, and shirking shows a bad relationship. Think hard about Jesus' story and ask yourself, do I have a good relationship to the Lord or a bad one? Am I working or shirking? Is my life heading toward eternal happiness with God or eternal weeping in hell? Am I a winner or a whiner? Before we go further, here's a song expressing the attitude of a winner.
Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to Thee. Take my moments and my days, let them flow in ceaseless praise. Take my voice and let me sing.
That was the second chapter of Acts. Can you echo that song? Is everything you have devoted to Jesus? Let's take a closer look at Jesus' parable of the talents and at what it means for us. In Jesus' story, the master is about to go on a journey, and he won't be back for a long time. Before he leaves, the master assigns each of his servants a share of his property to manage while he's gone. Why does he do that? You might think, well, that's obvious. He's going somewhere, and he needs someone to take care of his property till he returns. But there are more important things. The master is more concerned about what will happen to his servants than what will happen to his property. One reason for entrusting property to his servants is that he wants them to remain faithful to him while he is gone. When someone is gone for a long time, it's all too easy for a relationship to wither away. We sometimes say, absence makes the heart grow fonder. But all too often, the opposite is true. Absence makes the heart go wander. You probably know what I mean. You have a close friend, but then one of you has to move away. As you say goodbye, you both promise to stay in touch. But it's not long before you stop writing and phoning each other, and your relationship seems like ancient history. Not many relationships remain strong when a lot of time and distance is involved. The master in Jesus' story understands that it's easy to forget someone when they're gone, so he gives each of his servants a share of his property to work with until he returns. The servants aren't likely to forget their master if they're doing his work every day and expecting him to come back. Now, this master represents Jesus himself. The Lord told this story just a few days before he was crucified, knowing that he would die and rise again and return to heaven. He was leaving this earth, and it would be a long time before he returned. We've reached the end of the year 2000, and still Jesus has not returned. Jesus knows that the longer he is gone, the more we'll be tempted to forget about him and live as though he does not exist. So Jesus gives each of us something we can serve him with as a continual reminder that he is our rightful master and we are his servants. No matter how long he waits before he comes back, Jesus remains the master. The talents in this parable represent the share of God's world that He gives to each of us: abilities, money, education, family, time, opportunities, everything we have. It's all on loan from God. Not everyone receives the same amount. Each one gets the share God decides is fitting. The Lord commands us to advance His cause and make the most of what He has given us. As long as we're doing His work, we can't forget Him, and we can't forget our identity as His servants. Jesus has another important reason for giving us each a small part of His world: to bring out how we really relate to Him and what sort of servants we are. Do we love Him or resent Him? Are we productive or useless? Someday, productive, faithful servants will be promoted beyond their wildest dreams and reign with Christ in heaven. Their responsibilities as co-rulers of the universe will be vast. Their wealth of joy will surpass anything money can buy. But who should hold such positions and enjoy such eternal riches? Only those who are first faithful in smaller things. Your handling of what you have for a few years on earth shows whether or not you belong forever in the kingdom of heaven. Jesus puts it this way: whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, says Jesus, who will trust you with true riches? Before Jesus gives you huge responsibilities and privileges in the kingdom of heaven, He first tests how trustworthy you are in handling smaller matters here on earth. Now that we have a better understanding of the Master, let's look at the servants, beginning with the good workers. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more, says Jesus. Notice that this man went at once. He didn't sit around and say, maybe I'll get around to it later. When I was a boy, my mom would sometimes tell me to take out the garbage or cut the grass. If I was sitting on the couch reading, I might say, yeah, I'll get around to it when I finish this chapter. My mom would reply, David, delayed obedience is disobedience. I'll never forget her words or her tone of voice. True obedience begins at once. When I urge you to put your faith in Jesus and live for Him, you might be tempted to say, maybe later, but I don't think I'm ready for that yet. But if you're not ready to serve the Lord, you're not ready to meet Him either. What will happen if He comes back before you're ready? It's a lot better to live for Jesus right now than to wish you had later. Jesus calls us to respond at once. Don't respond by saying, maybe later. Later may be too late. If you don't have a healthy relationship with Jesus and haven't been using your talents for Him, the time to change is at once, before this day ends, before the year 2000 ends. In Jesus' story, the first servant goes at once, puts the master's money to work, and makes a handsome profit. His 5 talents produce 5 more. It's a beautiful thing when people of the highest talent level achieve great things for Jesus. But not everyone gets the maximum number of talents. The second servant receives a smaller amount, 2 talents. Does he complain that he's been entrusted with less? Does he whine that he's been given 3 fewer talents than the first servant? No, he simply takes the 2 he does have and gains 2 more for his master. Like the first servant, he's a winner. He makes the most of what he's been given. Some of us are 2-talent people. We don't have as much money, clout, or skill as the 5-talent superstars. We can't make million-dollar donations or reform entire nations or produce works of genius that endure for centuries. We simply don't have the gifts to accomplish such things. Does that make us failures? No, a two-talent person can be a loving husband whose wife grows closer to God, a faithful parent whose children grow up to serve the Lord, a caring friend who makes a real difference to a few people. A two-talent pastor may not make international headlines, but he makes disciples in his own congregation and community. A two-talent giver can't give as much as a billionaire, but can still advance a good cause. If you're a two-talent person, the Lord doesn't hold you accountable for what he hasn't given you. He holds you accountable for what he has given you. So don't feel bad if you can't match the achievements of those with more talents. Just be faithful with the talents you have. Be glad for five-talent folks who do five-talent wonders, but also be glad if you're a two-talent person who produces a solid two-talent result for Christ. In Jesus' story, the five-talent servant and the two-talent servant are both winners when their master finally returns. You can imagine how happy they are to see him. They've been working hard and they've been looking forward to this moment for a long time. But they don't give any speeches. The first servant doesn't say, "Master, I've been working so hard. Master, I think you're a wonderful person. Master, even though you took a long time, I always knew you'd be back." All this is true, but he doesn't need to say it. He simply says, "Master, you entrusted me with 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more. That says it all. His actions express what's in his heart. Notice how the master responds. He doesn't say, "All right, more money for me." No, he says, "Well done, good and faithful servant." The master is obviously more interested in the servant than in the money. The master sees that this servant's heart is in the right place. The way he used the money for his master's cause is proof that he's good. And the fact that he kept working despite his master's long absence is proof that he is faithful. The master praises the servant and promotes him. He says, "You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things." Then he does something which gives further proof of his generous character. He says, "Come and share your master's happiness." He treats this man more like a partner and friend than a servant, and invites him to enjoy all the benefits of the master's friendship and success. The master gives the same warm response to the man who doubled his 2 talents. The man has produced a smaller amount, but he was given a smaller amount to start with. He's done his best with what he's been given, and the master is delighted. Jesus shows clearly that if you love him and work for him, you can expect a warm reception in heaven, whether you have many talents or just a few. It's not how many talents you've been given, but how well you use them. If you've been using your time, your money, and your abilities to work for Jesus and make the world a better place, Jesus has good news for you. On the other hand, Jesus also has news for those who don't want to do the master's work. And it's not good news. In Jesus' story, one servant simply buries the talent he has been given and then digs it up when the master returns. This man ends up being thrown into darkness, weeping, meaning he ends up in hell. Doesn't that sound like awfully harsh punishment merely for burying the talent? The man doesn't sound so bad, does he? He doesn't beat up on the other servants. He doesn't waste the master's money on booze and wild parties. He keeps the master's money nice and safe in the ground. What's wrong with that? The man's problem is this. He refuses to commit himself. If he had a good relationship to his master, he would go to work right away like the other servants. But he resents his master and would rather do his own thing while the master is gone. Yet he doesn't quite dare to take his chances that the master won't return. He doesn't dare to squander the master's money on wild parties. Too selfish to work and too timid to rebel, he tries to play it both ways. He does his own thing while the master's gone, but he keeps the talent in a safe place just in case the master returns and demands it back. Maybe you have just enough religion to to be a little afraid of God, but not enough to love Him or work hard for Him. You're not using your life to advance the cause of Christ, and you're not really eager for the Lord to return, but you still hedge your bets just in case He does return. You get married in a church ceremony, and you go along with the form of religion you grew up with as a kind of insurance. You're not about to devote your life to serving God and helping other people, but you don't quite dare to throw it all away either. So you bury your obligation to God in a safe place. You may even dig it up on an occasional Sunday morning to make sure that it's still there. Well, the day of reckoning comes. We noticed earlier that when the hard-working winners reported to the master, they needed very few words. Their actions spoke for them. But the shirking whiner is another story. He gives a speech. He explains why he didn't put his master's money to work. The master is harsh and takes what doesn't belong to him, etc., etc., etc. But in the midst of all these excuses, the whiner condemns himself. The more he talks, the more he shows his laziness and his bad attitude toward the master. Have you ever noticed that the less people accomplish, the longer their explanations become? Whiners always have plenty of excuses, even in relationship to God. Lord, you're such a harsh master. You allow so many unfair things to happen. You demand so much and give so little. In light of what a harsh master you've been, Lord, you should be grateful that in spite of it all, I've kept going to church and I've never plunged into a really filthy lifestyle. Here's what you gave me. You can't expect much more. A whiner often tries to blame the master. Notice that in Jesus' story, the master doesn't try to refute the whiner's negative opinion of him. There is a problem in the relationship, all right, but the problem is with the servant, not the master. It's clear from the way that the master treated the faithful servants that he was, in fact, a very generous man. But he doesn't bother explaining that. Why should he explain? He doesn't have to answer to the servant. The servant must answer to him. His message to the whiner is, "We're not here to discuss what kind of master I am, but what kind of servant you are. I'm not the one being judged here. You are, and you're wicked and lazy." On Judgment Day, we won't be judging the Lord. He will be judging us. And the Lord will condemn whiners. People who want to avoid serving Christ and want Him to stay out of their lives will finally get their wish in a most horrible way. All their responsibilities and talents, everything God has given them, will be taken away, and they will be banished from His presence forever and cast into hell. Now let's return to the question we started with. Are you a winner or a whiner? If you're a whiner, you need to change before it's too late. Does this mean you just need to try harder and do a little bit more to earn the master's approval? No, you need more than a New Year's resolution. You need a new relationship to Christ. Before you can change your actions, your attitude must change. You need to believe in Jesus, love Him, and expect that He will come again. You can't create this new relationship on your own. The Lord must do it within you. So begin by admitting that your relationship to Jesus is not what it should be, and that the fault is yours, not His. Admit to Jesus that you have not loved Him or longed for His return. Admit that you have resented or ignored His claims on your life. Admit that you have been shirking instead of working, whining instead of winning. Grieve over your sin and turn away from it. Ask the Lord to have mercy on you, to forgive you, and to give you a new attitude and a new relationship. Jesus died so that sinners could put the past behind them and start over. And He sends His Holy Spirit to transform people from whiners to winners. The Lord can change not only what you do, but who you are. If the Lord gives you a new heart, creates in you a warm love for Him, and a strong faith that he's coming again, you will go from shirking to working, from whining to winning. Then what you do to serve him will spring naturally from your relationship with him. If you're already a believer who is working faithfully for Jesus, then Jesus' parable gives you strong encouragement to keep it up. Perhaps you sometimes become weary in doing good, and you wonder why it's taking so long for the Lord to return. Take heart. Jesus is coming again, and he will give a generous reward to all who love him and work for him. He has a tremendous celebration planned for his friends and faithful workers. You will someday hear his loving words, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." Whether you've had many talents to work with or only a few, your ultimate reward is to share in the infinite, eternal happiness of Jesus the Master. Lord Jesus, help us to be honest with ourselves. Move those who are lazy and resentful toward you to seek a new relationship, to plead for your mercy and forgiveness, and to love and serve you. Help those who are already faithful, but feel tired and discouraged after years of serving you and longing for your return. Encourage them that the work is not in vain. Thank you for the privilege of working for you, Lord. Amen.
You've been listening to the Back to God Hour with David Fettes. If you'd like your own printed copy of today's message, you may have one free of charge. Just write us and ask for the message called Winner or Whiner. Our address is the Back to God Hour, Box 557755, Chicago, Illinois, 60655. If you prefer a cassette or CD of the broadcast, you may have one for $4. The name of the message again is Winner or Whiner, and the address is the Back to God Hour, Box 557755, Chicago, Illinois, 60655. And when you write, please include the call letters of this station. For those connected to the Internet, our web address is simply the Back to God Hour's initials, btgh.org. A complete listing of stations and broadcast times for the Back to God Hour radio, Primary Focus Television, and Kids Corner Radio is also available. We'd also like you to know about our daily devotional booklet called Today. It contains a Bible reading, a meditation, and a brief prayer for each day of the week. We'd be glad to send you a copy of Today free of charge if you write us at the Back to God Hour, Box 557755, Chicago, Illinois, 60655. If you don't already belong to a Bible-believing church and want help finding one, please write us and we'll be glad to help. Or if you'd like to study great truths of the Bible through the mail, ask about enrolling in a free Bible correspondence course. Just write the Back to God Hour, Box 557755, Chicago, Illinois, 60655. The Christian Reformed Church brings you the Back to God Hour each week as part of its worldwide broadcast ministry. We're glad you've been listening, and we hope you'll join us again next week.